It's about a ship called Nella Dan, and I know lots of people
Has anybody
remember.
Heard of the Nella Dan before? Because this is based on a real ship. Yeah, we've got a couple of hands there.
And I think every kid in Hobart knew Nella Dan. It was this big, red, beautiful ship, Danish ship with a Danish crew and Danish pastries and fresh coffee and these huge Vikings. That's how I saw it when I was little. So I found some photographs of Nella that used to be on my wall when I was 10. I hadn't looked at them for 30 years. And it just all came flooding back. And that day I started writing this book.
So the book itself is fictional, but based on a ship that was loved.
It's based on a real ship. She did 26 years of service for the Australian Antarctic Division. She helped build most of the bases, map out all of Australia's territory, the Australian territory. She was very much loved and still is, especially by her crew. I did a lot of research. I went to Denmark and interviewed many ex-crew of Nella Dan, and pretty much all of them would cry at some point, even though it was 27 years ago that they lost their ship. But still, they think about her every day.
Can I just ask, before we talk about the characters in your book, I mean, obviously the Nella Dan is the central character. Mm-hmm. What was her fate?
She ran aground at Macquarie Island during a refueling, the base with oil. Mm. So they used to pump it off with a big pipe hose. Macquarie Island, for those who know Macquarie Island, is 54 degrees south. So it's right in the heart of the Southern Ocean, in the most violent part of the Southern Ocean, the most stormy, the windiest part. So it's
but isn't it
rock.
The most non-Antarctic kind of part where the bases are? Because it's less ice than the others.
It's less ice and the ships can get there all year. It's an amazing place. It's a mountain in the sea that's got so many penguins that you can't see the sand.
Wow.
You just see black and white as penguins and elephant seals. But she was there. The weather went really bad during the refueling and she was driven onto some rocks really close to the shore. The damage didn't seem too bad. Everybody got off the ship. There was no death. There was a few injuries, bruises. Yeah. The captain lost his tooth. And he stayed with the ship. And then there was a big insurance battle to decide who would pay, what would happen, would she be towed home. And after 20 days of this battle, she was scuttled, which is put down. So she was injured and she had taken on a fair bit of water, but it was controversial.
Maybe she didn't need to go,
maybe
is that what
you're saying? Maybe she didn't need to go, but she's there. And so she's 5 kilometres down in the dark now off Macquarie Island, and everything went down with the ship. Nothing was salvaged. So it's really sad.
Do you remember that time, that moment in history when you heard it in Hobart?
I do. I think no one could believe it in Tasmania. Everyone thought she was coming home. People in Hobart had these T-shirts that said Nella Dan, never surrender, and welcome home, Nella Dan. People were ready for her to be coming home, and it was Christmas Eve. And then that's when the news came through that she'd gone. And, there was a lot of anger and tears and people were pretty upset. Yeah. Some people were still very upset.
I'm talking with Favel Parrott, When the Night Comes is the name of her most recent book. The Nella Dan obviously is the central character in your book, but then on top of that you have your own fictional characters whose stories are woven with different narratives too, isn't it? From different perspectives throughout the book.
Yeah, I have a young girl who's obsessed with this ship and Antarctica. A little bit of her is me. I certainly was obsessed with Antarctica and I wanted to be a sailor desperately when I was 10 and I forgot about that. And lucky for me, writing this book, I got to go to sea on Aurora Australis, I got to go to Antarctica, I got to go to Macquarie Island, so I got to live out this sort of fantasy of being a part-time sailor for a couple of months. But the other character...
What did you learn from that experience, though? What did that bring to your characters, do you think?
Oh, it was so key. It was through the Antarctic Arts Fellowship, which is open every year to all artists, so if there's anyone out there who is really keen to get involved with an artistic project that involves Antarctica, please apply. Just go to the Antarctic Division website. There's no money. It's not a cash prize. You get a berth, pretty much a bunk on Aurora Australis, and the chance to go to a working base, which is something you can't pay to do. You're not allowed to go to those bases.
But it's not a cruise ship, Aurora Australis.
It's bare bones.
Pretty hard, yeah.
And I had to get up at 4:30 and mop the decks and do the dishes all day. I did safety rounds. I, you know, was covered in grease. I did time in the engine room. I worked really hard, but I loved every minute of it. It was incredible. Without that, I really probably couldn't have written my other character, who is a Danish sailor, and he works in the galley. He's a chef. So I was with him the whole time I was on the ship. He was really talking to me while I was doing the dishes, the same sorts of things he would have been doing, loading the dishwasher, getting the scraps off the plate, cleaning the roasting pans, getting the meat out of the freezer, all the things. Those things haven't changed in the 27 years. They still are the same on a ship. And really, the galley is the heart of a ship. It creates routine, comfort. When people are bored, they come into the galley to talk to the chefs.
It's the heart, isn't it?
Yeah. And the galley crew work the most hours. It's not the hardest job or the most stressful, but it's 14 hours a day. You know, it's a triple shift, so it's tough. Mm. That's 7 days a week too. They don't get a day off.
Mm.
So I got to experience that and the fatigue and all of the things that brings. It was an incredible experience. I couldn't have written this book without that experience. So I was very lucky.
Did you have your characters before you went on that trip, or did they come to you on board?
I did have them, but I thought I had them, but I didn't have them in the complete form they are now.
Yeah.
And that trip, yeah, they were with me all the time.
So did you actively pursue doing the things that you thought your characters might do then?
I
because
did.
You already had them, or did that come to you as you were doing those
well,
things?
Well, the crew of Aurora Australis were very patient with me, and I really hassled them at the start. I want to do work. And that's when the captain sort of said, well, okay, you know, you can mop the decks at 4:30, which would take 5 hours, the internal decks. And I'd turn up every morning and do it.
5 hours of mopping? Oh, that sounds like hard labour to me.
Well, the ship's, you know, moving.
Oh.
It's quite interesting. But after a couple of days of that, he knew I was serious. So then he really gave me some really interesting jobs. I did the inventory of the lifeboats while they're on their own sort of rollicks moving, and that took 3 hours each lifeboat. You know, I went right down to the bottom holes to check cargo. Amazing things. I really loved it.
Do you think that this sounds to me like it's as much a Tasmanian book as a Danish sort of historical book?
It definitely is. It's Hobart. So it's the Hobart I remember as a child, which for some reason I've blacked out summer. I don't remember it ever being warm in Tassie. And we all know it is, especially when you go down at this time of year. I just remember it being me being cold all the time, raining all the time, grey, the grey streets. And I used to catch the ferry to school and it was always freezing. So those memories came back. I tried to work from memory and not what Hobart's like now, because it is a livelier place than it was in the 1980s. There's bars and cafes,
yeah,
and people now.
Yeah.
Whereas in the 1980s, it really was, to me, a dead town, a town of ghosts.
So you obviously are no longer living in Hobart?
No, I moved when I was 18 back to the mainland, as Tasmanians call it. And I didn't go back to Tassie for a long time, maybe 10 years, and it had changed a lot. It is really beautiful, but I also find it, there's a sadness there too, the past and the, not just the Indigenous past, but the, you know, the it being the harshest prison in Australia, it having such a isolated history and such a violent history. I think a lot of that's still there and you can feel it sometimes.
Right. When the night comes, and it's almost like a homage, isn't it, to the Nelladan, do you think
Definitely.
That it may have the power to resurrect some sort of interest in perhaps having a look where it is and bringing it back?
I can tell you that it's probably impossible to bring her up. She's 5 kilometres down in very, 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 very cold water. But what has happened, which has been amazing, some things that have happened is everybody thought that the bell of Nelladan went down with a ship, and in sort of seafaring superstition, the bell is the voice of a ship and the soul. And the name is written on the bell when the ship is first built, and that name can never be changed, even if the ship's name changes.
Ooh.
So often you'll find a ship with the bell has a different name than what's painted on the side of the ship. Everybody thought Nella's bell went down with her, but it's turned up. And it is now in
Where did it turn up?
In Denmark. It somehow was taken off the ship, smuggled to Hobart, hidden for years and years. It's ended up in Denmark in the Aalborg Maritime Museum, which is where Nella was built. So it's a beautiful sort of returning home of her soul and her voice.
How big is the bell? It's not just a little thing you're sticking
in
your pocket.
You can't put it in.
We're talking person size.
Yeah.
That seems amazing. They could hide that.
It's amazing. And I don't know who did it. And everybody's very quiet about it. So that's...
There was a little conspiracy going on there.
I have some suspects, but they'll probably never tell me.
Absolutely.
The other thing that's happened is I get emails from ex-sailors of Nelladan who write to me and say, I found this book. It's brought everything back, and I'm, for the first time in 27 years, going to find the people I sailed with. So there's been this big reunions happening in Denmark, road trips and reunions and slide nights, and it's really nice.
Mm. I imagine that some of the sadness or the nostalgia of this is that, from my understanding, there was no warning, not much warning, when the ship was scuttled, and so there were a lot of possessions that went down with the Nelladan.
Yeah.
A lot of memories.
The crew who stayed with her were pretty adamant she was coming home, so they weren't taking things off her, they weren't salvaging anything. And then one morning they woke up and she was on fire, and that's another... Nobody knows how that happened, and it's never been explained. And then there was no salvage was possible. But some funny stories, when she actually went completely below the surface, all of the alcohol on board came up to the surface, and the salvage guys went round in their IRBs and got these amazing bottles of wine and aquavit and all sorts of things. And it was Christmas Eve, so everybody had not a party because they were very sad, but drank the wine.
Yeah. Maybe had a wake.
Yeah, maybe had a wake. Yeah.
It seems bizarre to me that those sorts of things wouldn't have been taken off before it went down. What was the urgency? Why did it have to happen so quickly? Was there politics surrounding that?
There wasn't. Look, I don't know everything. I researched for a long time, and there's many different stories and there's different points of view. I spoke to some of the scuttling crew, and they have their reasons for why they did what they did, and they thought she was unsafe and towing her would have been hazardous. The Danes think the opposite. And I'm not saying who's right or wrong. And what happened, and in hindsight it would have been great to get some of the things, like even the log book and the cartoon book and the crew book went down. I just wish she was here. I dreamt a lot about her when I was writing, and sometimes I would dream that she was... I'd get a phone call and a little Danish voice would say, she's back, she's going to be in Port Melbourne, but only for a little while. So I'd just get up and run and run and run and run and just grab onto her as she was pulling out and just go, I'm coming with you. And I'd wake up thinking, oh, my God, she's back. But
you
of course,
speak of her like she's your long-lost friend.
People who love ships would know how attached you get to them, and they become very real. Mm. And you pat them, and when Aurora Australis would hit the ice and really struggle, pretty much everyone would just pat her bulkhead and go, good girl, you can do it, and she'd shudder through. Nella, some of these guys were with her for 10 years, one man for 17 years. He didn't have a home in Denmark. Nelladan was his home, so you can imagine how they felt about her, and I definitely do feel that way about her.
You say it so correctly. I'm not sure if you're aware, but there's been a movement here in Adelaide to bring back the City of Adelaide clipper ship from Scotland, where it was laying rotten, and it cost a huge amount of money, an enormous amount of time, and a lot of dedicated hard work by the group involved to finally get her back here.
Yeah, passion project.
Absolutely. Now, there are a lot of people who don't understand that love for ships who may not get it. And, I think it's lovely, but I probably don't have that passion that you have. But those that do really, really
love
them.
It becomes this body that keeps you safe, and it's... And the world goes by your porthole. It's quite amazing.
Mm. Well, I'm sure that everyone who knows that ship, maybe who loves that ship, will be very interested in the fictional stories you've laid over the reality of this book. And I guess just to return to your characters, are these just as much a part of your heart as the ship is?
Definitely, especially Danish Bo, the chef. There's so much beautiful food in this book too. It'll make you hungry. So I learned a lot, and I got to sample a lot of Danish food, not only in Denmark, but a restaurant in Melbourne let me go and sit there and hassle the chefs out and ask them a lot. So Bo was with me a lot, and I still think about him pretty much every day. It's weird with writing characters and being so close to them, because they're just yours for 2 years, and then you hand them over to the world, but they don't leave you either. They stay. So I still talk to Bo.